everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster, back after a hiatus. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
And Daryl Loomis.
Righty-ho.
And new dad, Eric, is with the baby. So, you know, yes, best wishes to him and baby Leah. So that's always good to hear the little Filibuster crew in beginning. And I have to say that I'm kicking myself. It seems like we do this once a month where we start a pretty interesting conversation, like a lot more interesting than the bilge we usually spew, and I just forget to hit record. But I was just telling these guys, just reading up on Noah and looking at some of the trailers, I am legitimately pumped for this movie and very interested in seeing what happens here, because I think, it could be the biggest disaster ever, you know, but from what I've seen, I'm actually kind of bullish on it. I think that Aronofsky is so crazy that it could be just really cool.
I mean, Aronofsky's never made a movie I haven't liked, at least on some level.
Uh-huh.
The story is interesting, as we discussed in the last 15 minutes, that you can't hear.
Right.
But it's got a universality that is – it's better than what we – you know, oftentimes you get a real Patton. It's Neo and it's Luke Skywalker and it's sort of the messianic myth.
Yeah.
And it's always that same struggle. This is a different one with a lot with a lot of different themes about corruption and rebuilding society and like we were talking about
redemption, like
all sorts of things. And we have all sorts of stuff today, like The Walking Dead, our zombie craze about, and it's all about rebuilding the world,
right?
And that's what the Noah story is. So it's universal, and I'm really curious to see how people react because Aronofsky's a crazy guy, and I've never seen him be restrained.
Right,
I mean, Black Swan's restrained, but it's still a pretty crazy movie.
Right.
Yeah.
I think as with anything, you'll get your kind of vocal detractors or whatever, but I think that's just kind of built in. I've got a feeling, I don't know, maybe this is me just being bullish, but I'm really thinking that there's a chance that this will be – this could surprise some people, I think. So, I mean, it's
It could be one of the rare movies to win to secure the Oscar early in the year.
Wow.
It could be Heaven's Gate material.
Yeah, you're right. It could go either way. Absolutely. So,
and I'm totally thrilled to see where it goes.
I was excited to think it's only about a month and some change away. So we will see this
so soon.
We will see the fruit of this, but it's a feeling. Again, if it was like Paul W.S. Anderson doing this, zero interest.
Right? Tony Scott's Noah.
Zero interest. But,
I might have interest in Tony Scott's Noah. That might be funny.
That's true. That's right. A lot of jump cuts. Right?
Yeah, lots of jump
lens
cuts.
Flares.
Yui Ball's Noah.
Yeah, Yui Ball. No, thank you. You know, I don't want Kirk Cameron's Noah. I don't want any of that.
I'd watch Paul Verhoeven's Noah.
Yes,
there we go.
That would be fascinating. So, I think the Beavers would be the first on the
album. Absolutely.
So anyway, but yeah, we had talked about a good 15 minutes. I think we're going pretty deep on that. So maybe the wind will grab us again sometime. But I think this could be it'll be regardless. I'm fascinated to see what comes out of the laboratory, to be honest. And it's going to be like a 3-hour thing. So, and I think, believe it or not, even though you know obviously only a couple pages, and it's not like we're not talking about the Lord of the Rings here. I think there's I think you can fill that 3 hours thematically and with spectacle, and it won't feel like it's being dragged out. I really think that. So,
every one of his movies has been, at the very least, I mean, they've all been long. Pi wasn't very long, but they've all been pretty long. They're always going to be at the very least visually stimulating.
Right. Absolutely.
I think there's no, where, like Paul Thomas Anderson with I love his movies, but The Master wasn't always visually interesting.
Yeah.
It was sometimes kind of slow and not very, kind of plodding. But Aronofsky, for all of his faults, is never plodding.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you'd call his storytelling plodding, but if you like visuals, which I take as almost as important as the story personally, he's never boring.
Yeah.
It's always going to look nutty.
So we'll see.
I'm super curious.
Super curious. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, round one win, because I'm very curious. Like, I went from apathy or antipathy, probably apathy, like a week ago, to like full on the behind the scenes juiciness, the edge, the darkness, and the trailers have really come together to make me fascinated by what's going to come. So we'll see. But, more on that, in the you know, we'll have some filibuster reviews in the shows. But let's move on real quick. So, Mac, it's been a week or so. So, a couple weeks, actually. We haven't heard from you in a couple weeks. So, anything to report?
Well, I saw another movie that also deals with fighting corruption and rebuilding the world. I saw the Lego movie.
Oh, yes.
I liked it a lot. It was really a lot of fun. It was very funny, just like straightforward comedy from beginning to end. And, yeah, it was a real blast. The animation is really, you know, clever and inventive. And, I mean, you know, I've played it, not all, but a bunch of the Lego games. And so it's kind of that sort of, I want to say simple comedy, but sort of a timeless comedy that doesn't rely too much on, there are some pop culture gags, but they work in context, you know? Trying to think of like the best way to describe it. Maybe it's sort of just old fashioned screwball comedy type of stuff.
Not sure. Take my wife, please type comedy.
Yes.
Well, not quite that old fashioned.
But, hey, but it always gets a laugh. You laughed. It always gets a laugh.
It was great fun. Some people have called it like one big toy commercial, but I don't know. I think the movie's heart is in the right place.
I am in love with Transformers, the original TV show, and if there was ever a commercial, it's that.
Yeah.
Screw it.
Same with the original Ninja Turtles cartoon. It's like every week there was a new toy. Yeah.
Heck with it, you know. It's what it is. It's all about merchandising. That's great.
There's a scene where they talk about all of the different Lego worlds coming together, and there's like this really rapid slideshow that goes by showing all the different worlds, and they're just photos of the various Lego kits.
The completed kits. Yeah, that's hilarious. But that's probably it. But you got to look at that as kind of a joke too.
Oh, it's totally an in-joke.
Fun of themselves for shilling themselves so badly.
Yeah, totally.
So, and, might as well have fun.
Some people
say. Really what it is.
Yeah, some people say it gets a little too sentimental at the end, and you could make that case, but, you know, it's a family movie, and so they got to go for the tearjerker ending, and it's fine for what it is. But overall, though, I had a really great time with it, just lots of laughs and it moves along fast, and it goes from setting to setting to setting. So, you know, it starts out in the big Lego city that we saw in all the ads, but then there's a variety of other settings as they go through the different Lego worlds. So, lots of cameos and stuff too. So,
all right,
I definitely recommend it if you just want to like forget your cares and just have a good time at the movies.
Very nice. All right, Darryl, how about you?
All right. Well, I over the last 2 days, because I for some reason had neglected to watch it before, but I finished the last two episodes of the third season of Sherlock.
Okay.
Have either of you watched them?
Yes.
Okay. Not yet.
Not yet. Any of them?
I've seen them all.
Well, yes, but Mac.
I haven't seen the third season.
You haven't seen any of the third season? Okay. So all I'll say then.
Seasons one and two.
All I'll say then is they do a brilliant job again. They wrote themselves into quite a fix with the end of the third episode.
They did.
I'm very curious to see. It's clearly done to get people salivating for a fourth season.
Although I will say I wasn't salivating as much after this one as it was the last end of the last one.
Not as much. I also kind of expected it to happen sooner or later.
Yeah.
Because it's too juicy not to do.
Right.
But what I really liked was the second episode that they were able to just like – back away from the heavy mystery, let them be comic characters and like be characters.
Yeah.
And then have sort of that episode was sort of like those episodes of Community where they're clip shows, but of things we've never seen.
Right.
And so it's got some of that, and it's got Benedict Cumberbatch being allowed to be comic. And if anybody's watched him on like the Graham Norton show or anything, it's very clear that he's got good comic chops. And you know, just lets him sort of, you know, feats that side of it. And it was really refreshing and fun. But nothing beats the first episode of the second season, because nothing beats Irene Adler.
That's true. Okay. So Mac, I was wondering how your Arrow viewing is going.
Yeah, I've just been catching the odd episode here and there on the Netflix, and so I'm getting near to the end of the first season.
What are your thoughts on Laurel Lance?
I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of indifferent.
Yeah. I wish I could return to that gleeful indifference. Now it's just all-out loathing. I like literally fast-forward through all their scenes. I just can't take it anymore. Everything else in that show I think is great, but it's brutal, and they're just like determined to do something with her that's going to irritate me, I know. But
yeah. They did – in the first season, they did like a 3 or 4 episode arc with Huntress.
Yes.
And Huntress was really awesome. I liked her a lot.
Yeah, cool. Right. Right. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I'm not – but still, I think it's a great show, and they continue to be hugely generous with their DC Comics property. You're getting everything. So
yeah. I like how they portray Deathstroke too.
Yeah, he's great. He gets
cool. He's very silent. He's just like this lumbering killing machine.
So. That's right. And I will say that, and it gets — this isn't too spoilery, but in this season you get the whole regalia at some point, and it's badass. So
that's what I've heard.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping that we get a little anti-hero vibe, because he seems like too – because is he an anti-hero in the comics? Like, he's not a true villain, right?
Right. He's like a mercenary. He works for himself.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. All right.
He's kind of on both sides of the law.
Gotcha. So that's cool. Good. I'm glad you're getting a kick out of it. But I continue to find that show excellent, and Banshee, as I think I've talked about, Banshee is on its second season for Cinemax, and it continues to be great. They did
I got that on the Netflix too. I got the first 2 episodes.
Wait, Banshee's on Netflix?
I got in the little red envelopes.
Great, nice. Have you watched any of that yet?
I saw the first 2 episodes.
Oh, what'd you think?
I liked it.
Good. It's like B-movie pulp bliss. I love it. Amish Mafia, then the bar fight with the beer bottle down the guy's gullet. That's pretty awesome.
The bad guy, he's basically Mr. Burns.
He's like Mr. Burns, right.
He's just, when he's sick to the hounds and the guy, I'm like, he's Mr. Burns.
It's just such a great, I love the icons of this criminal taking over this, the identity of a sheriff and just like making it up as he goes. It's great. But yeah, so excellent episode this past Friday. Like totally, a total departure from like a real kind of ballsy episode. Everyone is kind of, each episode is like crazy and over the top, but this one like was quiet and like character focused and great. So like that gives me hope that it's that they're building something decent, not just like pulpy pulp. So
It isn't just like trashy.
It isn't. Absolutely.
It's got some brains to it.
It does, and like obviously they're hitting a quota of things here and there, but it isn't just gratuitous for gratuitous sake. There's something there, and it's I think I'm glad you're watching it, Mac. I think you'll like it as it goes on and on. It gets really really fascinating. So. Yeah, so that's my report. That's kind of what I'm watching, and the wife's watching Olympics, and that's about it. So let's talk about stuff for the site. It's been a couple of weeks, so Mac, anything of interest?
Let's see. I saw the Starz miniseries, The White Queen.
Yeah, and?
Game of Thrones is the big sensation on TV, and that's loosely based on The War of the Roses. So Starz came along and said, well, we're going to do a miniseries on the actual War of the Roses.
Oh, good for them. That's like Asylum style.
So it's like Game of Thrones, but without dragons and monsters and giant walls made of ice.
It's like the Tudors, but
yeah, it's a lot like the Tudors.
Not Starz.
Right. It was kind of dreadful, actually.
So
it's basically every scene has to do with people plotting about the throne. We got to take over the throne, and who's going to rule? And there's no subplots. There's no side characters to give us some breathing room from the main plot.
Yeah,
so it's
funny.
Like just constantly just who's going to rule and who's plotting against the throne, and this person wants the throne, that person wants the throne, and it just becomes noise after a while. We really could have used some side characters to do their own thing, and there's a reason why TV shows have the A plot and the B plot, and because that B plot gives us some balance. And there are no B plots in The White Queen, and so it was rather dreadful.
Too bad.
All right, Daryl, what do you got?
Well, the last time we were on, I mentioned – I hadn't watched it yet. I mentioned that I was had slated to review for the week the collector's edition of Darkman.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And it had been a long time since I'd seen Darkman. I don't know if it had been – I probably have seen it once since it was released. And many years ago. It would have been many years ago. It's a freaking fantastic movie.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
And what I didn't realize was that not only is the Spider-Man series, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man series, templated in that movie, but so in a lot of ways is The Dark Knight. In the way that in that Gotham, in the way that Liam Neeson acts in the makeup with his voice and all of that, like that's all Chris what's his name, Christian Bale's doing so much of the same stuff. Like that's a seriously influential movie, much more than I ever expected to see. And the Blu-ray's fantastic.
Nice.
The commentary's funny. It's the cinematographer whose name escapes me right now, but he goes on like this sort of, it's not negative, but it's a critique of Raimi's filmmaking style, where he points out scenes where, cause he shot, Spider-Man 2 and 3 and, as well, and a couple other Raimi movies, but, where he points out scenes that were lifted directly from Darkman into the second Spider-Man, and all these little things, and it's a hilarious little commentary that's just like this sort of study of Sam Raimi. And there's lots of interviews; it's almost all interviews, but there's probably 3.5-4 hours of them, and they're all fun. It's a great DVD or a great Blu-ray, and the movie is way better than I remembered it.
Mm, it's been a while since I've seen it.
It's action. It's got comedy. It's almost hard R, but not quite.
Yeah.
It's got
a flying man on fire coming at
it's
you.
It's got a dude cutting off a dude's fingers with a cigarette thing.
That's right.
Cigar cutter.
Did you ever see Darkman 2?
I saw all three when they came out.
I know
the
three.
At the time, and they were dreadful.
I started watching 2, and I was like, I can't keep going.
Was Sam Raimi affiliated with the sequels at all?
No, Sam Raimi was not affiliated at all. That was just an excuse to get – as far as the I don't remember his name. The villain in the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Durant.
Yeah.
Yeah. His explanation is they wanted to get a movie about his story, so they just brought him back to life, essentially. Or they did. They went back in time.
Yeah.
So it's more about him than it is about Darkman. But it's terrible, but he's basically saying they thought the character was fun, so they wanted to make it about him. And he was happy to do it because it made him, it was like the first time he'd ever, and the last time he'd ever get to be essentially the lead in the movie. There's tons of fun interviews. Frances McDormand's interview is really fun. Liam Neeson's not on it as much as I would have hoped, but they have almost everybody else in spades. So great disc, great movie, highly, highly recommended.
Very nice. Let's see. I'll give you two here, more mainstream, but was a great surprise and delight for me was Rush, Ron Howard's Rush.
Mm.
Really good
movie. Race car.
Yeah, really good
remake of the Jennifer Jason Leigh movie. From
absolutely,
like
yes. I've been waiting for that forever, and they made it. Excellent. It had piqued my interest, but the idea of a racing movie, yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't really want it. But it's more, it's you know, more than a racing movie. It just looks at these two personalities, but it's Ron Howard's best, aside from Willow, of course, but, just really great, thrilling, well-paced, perfect, you know, great acting, just highly recommended, a legit good movie. So I would, and sport that I didn't know much about, and a time period, and a story I didn't know nothing about. So it was, it's kind of cool discovering that too. So, highly recommended. And then, lesser known, a little movie called Force 5. Does this ring a bell for anybody? No? No? Not ringing
Fox
a bell?
Force 5?
Yeah.
No, 1981. Yeah. 1981's. Force:5.
Oh, that's a different movie, yeah.
I basically requested it because the cover art looked interesting, right? So I got this, and lo and behold, it's directed by the same guy. It's written and directed by the same guy who wrote and directed Gymkhana.
Oh,
and there's a lot of Gymkhana feel in it. In fact, the guy who played Thorg in Gymkhana is in this one as a bad guy. And it definitely feels like, you know, dopey like Gymkhana. So basically, the daughter of a senator has been is in a cult, and they send the Force 5 in to get Richard Norton is in it, again from Gymkhana. There's a guy. So it's just like this team of badasses go undercover to go get this girl, and like one of the guys' name is Lockjaw. And it's like a G.I. Joe movie, you know? So, but it's not as awesome as it could have been, to be honest, but there was a pretty great part where the main guy is recruiting, you know, all of these badasses. And the femme fatale who you have to have on the team, right? This is how he recruits her. She lives by herself. He breaks into her apartment, puts a mask on, and attacks her. And they fight, you know, so he's pretending to be a would-be rapist or something, right? So they fight, and then finally he takes a mask off and says, "No, it's just me." And they laugh, and they, like, make out and have sex afterwards or something like that. I don't know. But it's like, wow, that's a bold move, recruiting her, pretending to be a rapist. You're amazing. You didn't get your head blown off. But that's okay. Could have been better. Could have been cooler. A little kind of lacking in some parts. But, hey, I got to see Thorg again, which is always a plus. So, see, not a ton, I guess, on the upcoming releases, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of thin. So I guess we could just move to our ambush topics. Again, if we had to record, we'd have like 15 minutes of extra Noah content. So
yeah, no kidding. Yeah, well, we might have to see it and do a review of it.
Yeah.
Do like an F this movie or something, whatever it's called.
Yes, that's right.
On that.
So let's get right to our ambush topics, I guess. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, well, I just saw the Lego movie, so Legos are fresh in the mind. And, you know, they have Lego Star Wars, they have Lego Pirates of the Caribbean, Lego Lord of the Rings. So what movie would you like to see a Lego set based on, and what would that look like?
Like a Lego set or Lego movie?
Oh, so many things just went through my mind.
Like a toy
from the movie.
If you would have Legos based on...
Okay, gotcha.
Like, you know, so like for example, Lego Star Wars is based on Star Wars, gotcha. And they all the little Lego people look like the Star Wars characters.
I'm gonna keep telling myself to keep it clean.
All right. Okay. Let's see. Would be a good one here.
All right. I'm going to forego my original thought of Lego the Beast, and or the Beast in Space. I guess you could have
too.
Or instead. Do Lego the Leviathan from Hellraiser 2, the maze.
Yeah.
Should actually be hard because all the pieces would look exactly the same.
Right. And you need that one part of it there where it like turns into a circus with like evil clowns for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
and it goes
sure.
back to the, like the rest of the maze.
Yeah, yes. That's the hard part.
Yeah. I guess just because the first thing I do with Lego guys is kind of pop their heads off. How about a Lego Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow playset?
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Think you could do a lot of good things, and those heads will just kind of pop it up. Let's say with the Lego horses, that'd be cool, you know. And the playset
architecture.
Yeah, the architecture. So that Hudson River, you know, the Hudson River Valley painter's architecture would come to life with Lego. That'd be pretty nice. So I think that could be Lego Witchcraft. I think there's a lot of room for that as well.
Yeah.
All right.
The one I had in mind was, and that's something else I watched recently, was Lego Sudden Death.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
So you could build the entire arena out of Legos, right?
That's right. A crashing helicopter would be great.
Right. You've got a Lego helicopter that comes crashing down the middle. You could build that gigantic kitchen that they have the fight in. And
big Lego mascot. That'd be good.
Right. Mascot pieces. And, yeah. So.
Did either of you see – on a side note related to that, the Parks and Recreation deleted scene of – did you guys watch it this past week?
I did. I didn't see the deleted scene though.
But the part with Andy singing for
the – Sudden Death song. Yes.
See the Sudden Death song?
It's awesome. It is so awesome.
It is fantastic.
Yeah. Like I think Parks and Rec has been better this year, but that's easily the best thing on that show so far this season.
That was phenomenal. Yeah. I can't believe they – I guess they didn't use it for time, but it was phenomenal.
It was great, yeah. Matt,
have you seen
it?
And I had a friend who
– No, I haven't.
Track it down.
It's worth watching. I have a friend who's never seen Sudden Death and could care less, but I brought him in and watched it, and now he knows what Sudden Death's about.
That's
and
right.
Never actually has to see it.
Well, that's his loss, of course. That remains
his loss, but at least he knows the glory of it in skeletal form.
Yes.
With a good song to boot.
All right. I will go next here. Large, menacing characters with low IQs.
Right. I'm not quite sure of his IQ, but I'm going to go with Lord Humongous from The Road Warrior.
He was an idiot. He was
definitely.
He had a big following, you know.
I mean, the guy drove head first into a tanker truck, right?
Yeah,
no apparent reason. Yeah, he did have a good following. But that's probably because his name was Lord Humongous.
Lord Humongous, yeah. You get for a guy's name is Lord Humongous, you pretty much step in line.
Nah, that's definite moron for sure.
I got one. Just give me a second to identify the name.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, we're going to go with yes. There we go. And again, I don't know what his IQ is, but it seems this way. I'm going with Leonard Smalls from Raising Arizona.
Oh.
I think if you had a higher IQ, you would come up with a better way to kill a rabbit than a grenade.
Nice. Good.
He's one of those guys. He seems kind of shark when he's bantering back and forth with Nathan Arizona Senior.
Yeah, but he does the dumbest things.
Right. But then, yeah, near the end of the movie, when things go crazy, you know, he's driving right through the fence and stuff.
Yeah.
One of my, I think, kind of a terrible, like, the narrative and plot is terrible, but the action movies, I think, are pretty underrated and pretty awesome. But Jet Li's Kiss of the Dragon, remember that? So, you know, Jet Li was kind of – he was building off of some Lethal Weapon 4 stateside fame, and, you know, Luc Besson or whatever gave him this vehicle. So what's her name was in that?
Bridget Fonda.
Yeah, Bridget Fonda was in it. So, like, everything in between the action scenes was just brutal and awful. But, like, the action scenes were really cool. And there's this – at the end, he matches up in this kind of epic throwdown with the twins. Remember those guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's like the little, spry little martial art guy, and then his big, stupid brother. Remember that? Yeah, so like they were kind of dressed same clothes, and they had like bleached platinum blonde hair. So the, you know, little guy was savvy and cunning and smart, and they had a pretty good fight. And the big guy just kind of lumbers out there and you know, kind of runs and tries to attack him and ends up predictably getting – just demolished by Jet Li in a pretty cool death scene, I might say. I think he like broke his knees and it broke his neck with a kick or something. And it was pretty violent. It's actually a pretty violent movie, but
that fight scene pretty much makes the whole movie.
If anything's a video game movie, it's that. Like he goes on to these boss fights, right? And it's like he just keeps moving up and up. But you're right, that is I think that's a legit cool and like the weird out of place weirdo DMX track, or maybe it's not DMX, or something else, some weird rap track is kind of playing over, but it fits for some reason. So, yeah. So, I saw that movie in the theater. There was a, someone brought like a 6-year-old to see it. And like, there's a pretty gruesome death scene at the end where like, Jet Li hits like some pressure point on the guy and blood bursts out of every orifice. It's pretty horrific.
Yeah. That's the whole hook of the movie.
That's the kiss of the dragon, right?
He's a crime-fighting acupuncturist.
Yeah, right. He is a crime-fighting acupuncturist. So,
That's just a rip-off of Zatoichi.
I don't know. I don't think there's not a ton original in that movie anyway, but whatever.
Clearly.
So whatever. Enough kiss of the dragon. Daryl, I guess. Go ahead, wrap this up.
All right. Well, I had one, but then right before we started recording, something came up that gave me a different idea.
Okay.
So I'll say my other one. So this might, I don't know. It might seem weird. I don't know. But something in, you know, TV or movies that is sort of universally found funny that you just can't get on board with. And if it's failure, I can go with my backup.
Okay. Well, I guess I can't quite. Okay, I'll give you a couple here, and they all tend to be CBS comedies, okay?
Okay, fair is fair.
Like, you know, Big Bang Theory draws in this huge audience, and it's entertaining, but the humor just doesn't seem to match up with the size of the audience or the vivaciousness of the laugh track.
Well, what I question, what confuses me is how Big Bang Theory gets these gigantic ratings and Community,
right,
being a tougher version – that deals with a lot of the same material is basically at the bottom of the ratings. I just don't get the
spirit. I'm not shocked by Community as well, just because it's so esoteric. I mean,
why is the Big Bang Theory popular?
That is, I mean, that stuff is, that's easy grist, right? There's not a lot. I mean, there's no like meta stuff going on there, right? I mean, it's geeks, but
it plays it safe.
Yeah, it plays it,
it does
safe.
Play
I mean,
it
like
safe,
Community
yeah.
is for geeks like us, you know. I don't think, you know.
And that's not.
Right. Like, I would, like, question, again, Parks and Rec has been uneven, but I think it's more mainstream palatable, and that gets no ratings at all.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, like, I would, like, I mean, it really is. And, like, we all like Amy Poehler, but, like, nobody watches her show, you know, which is,
right.
Even though she's kind of, you know, put forward as this huge, you know, player in TV, and no one watches the show. Or, like was no. any, like, who watched Chris and Ann leave that, you know, it was built up like this huge tearful
right,
cry.
Right. Thing. It's going to be like in the
watch
40s
it?
In
yeah,
ratings.
Absolutely. No one's going to watch it, you know? So, yeah, that's a good – so, like, I don't get that – like, I'm not even going to talk about, like, Two Broke Girls because I can't even – I didn't even stomach, like, 2 minutes.
It's just brutal.
I will say one show that has – I start out kind of liking and thinking is funny, and now I just legitimately despise, I think, is How I Met Your Mother. Mm. I mean, I just – my wife still likes it. I watched enough of it, but – again, that's super popular, it seems. It's really lauded, and I think it's – yeah, I think it gets
yeah.
so annoying. Like, it just annoys me.
I've never watched it. The cast is really appealing to me.
The cast is great, right.
But it seems like the kind of show I want to punch.
Right.
And so I've never watched an episode, even though I really like Jason Segel. I'm mixed on Allison Hannigan. I was never a huge Buffy fan.
Yeah.
But I really like Neil Patrick Harris, and I like watching him do almost anything. But I've never watched an episode just because it looks just odious.
Yeah, and I think I'm like the louder and more boisterous the laugh track is, the less, you know, like the less interest
yeah,
I have.
Why does CBS continue with the dang laugh track?
They just pump up the volume. Like even a show which is arguably the greatest sitcom ever made, like Seinfeld. Had a laugh track, but it was pretty muted, you know?
Pretty muted.
I mean, like, and the big laughs were legit big laughs, like Kramer at the special needs banquet, you know?
Well, and I read something.
Cormier, that was a sustained huge laugh, and that was, like, earning of it.
I
don't feel like any of these earn them.
Yeah, and I read something recently with, I don't remember where I read it now. It was just a couple of days ago, but about somebody watching an episode of Friends without the laugh track.
Oh, yeah.
And... it was genuinely creepy. What's his name? David Schwimmer?
Yeah.
What's his character's name?
Ross.
Thank you. The only Friends I've ever seen is the last 2 minutes in syndication before WWF SmackDown.
Okay, that's
so I don't know anything about this show except, so Ross apparently said something that made him sound like a murderous stalker, like pretty clearly. And the laugh track hit, and it's the big joke. But then without the laugh track, he sounds like a murderous stalker. So I'd like to, you know, I'd like people to get away from that so people can actually see what's funny, you know?
Yeah.
And
all right.
Which I didn't wanna... MASH. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Continue. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, I just – the difference watching MASH growing up with the laugh track and watching MASH on the DVDs without the laugh track was really marked.
Yeah, that was. I mean, the MASH laugh track was a huge joke. It was like Brady Bunch level of laugh track. You know?
Right.
The most disinterested live studio audience you could think of.
Right. So having that, you know, having it without that really like brings up what's really funny about the show and what's really interesting about the show and what sucks about the show.
Though on the flip side, I will say a show where the boisterous laugh track worked in its favor was Married with Children. Because
yes.
It was made for that audience that – you could just picture the guys with beers and pot bellies in that studio audience. You know,
right.
It just didn't feel like it felt like these guys were actually thinking they were watching the funniest thing they've ever seen in their lives. You know,
that's
like,
true.
So,
yeah, they filled that audience with real fans.
That, absolutely. So like, I will grant that. But just like,
sure.
Yeah, the how anyone can just laugh uproariously at. You know, like a CBS sitcom is just kind of beyond.
It's ridiculous.
Could you imagine a laugh track in Arrested Development? Like,
oh,
if you try to put a laugh track for every joke they did.
Every joke, it would just be constant laugh track.
I mean, wouldn't it be? It would just like.
It would add another half hour onto the show.
That's right. Yeah. It's just quick fits. And, like, they were just matching joke with laugh track. Fits and starts. So.
That would be hilarious.
Sorry, I'm going to digress. So, Matt, go ahead.
I guess in comedy with me, it's. You mentioned Friends, and I'm not a fan of Friends, even though it's insanely popular. And one of the things that always bugged me about it was that nobody talks like people talk. Watch an episode and really break down the dialogue. and the dialogue is just setup, joke, setup, joke, setup, joke. You know, every line of dialogue is just one line is a setup, the next line is a joke, and they just follow those beats throughout the entire episode, you know, and it never feels like these are real people, you know? And so that's always bugged me about that. They do a similar thing on Family Guy, where it's these crazy characters in their crazy world. They never come across as like actual characters. It's just the same thing. It's just, you know, setup joke, setup joke, setup joke. And you know, Community and Arrested Development, these are also cartoony shows that live in this really wild, you know, crazy worlds, but the writers are talented enough to, you know, dial things back just enough so that we get a sense of who these characters are.
Right.
And we get a sense that they're a family in Arrested Development, or they're this group of friends in Community.
You know, and with something like Community, you know, as an example, and what might be at this point my favorite episode that they've done is the Ass Crack Bandit episode.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which was brilliant, but not for nothing that they got Ben Folds to star on the show and write a song. And it just goes the extra – that's a show that takes the extra steps to reward fans. And a show like Friends or a show like Family Guy or a lot of shows on TV are really, really satisfied in just giving the audience the basic status quo that they've established.
Yeah.
And you know, a show like Community, a show like Arrested Development was never satisfied with that, and that's why those shows to me are genuinely great. And a show like Family Guy has its moments, but really doesn't stand up to anything.
Yeah. Does The Hangover count?
I think The Hangover kind of counts, especially because they kicked the horse into the ground.
We laughed pretty heartily when we saw it.
I loved The Hangover when I saw it, but I don't think it would hold up today. 40-year-old version doesn't hold up today.
I can't remember why I saw it a second time. I didn't laugh at all. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure why. And I haven't seen the sequels. So.
Some of it's – well, the sequels apparently are all the same. I mean, they look the same. But there's nothing to laugh at once the outrageousness is gone.
I guess.
There's no substance.
Yeah. When you know what's coming,
right? That's true.
The excitement is gone.
Like, oh, Zach Galifianakis, you know, slammed that baby's head in the door.
Look at that!
Oh, that's so shocking. And now it's like,
And now you see it again. It's like, oh, well, there he goes doing the thing that I expected him to do. Whereas with Arrested Development, there's always something new to latch onto. I mean, I don't know how many times I've watched the Arrested Development series.
Right.
I don't even know. I don't even want to venture to say more than 20.
Right.
I don't know. I always find new material, and I can't say that about virtually anything else that I know. And I appreciate, you know, Mitch Hurwitz and I appreciate Dan Harmon and people like that for, you know, going that extra mile, and you just don't get it very often. So, you know, also coincidentally, those shows are always poorly rated.
Of course. So that leads us to what is your
well, it came out
suggestion.
Yeah, just minutes before we started recording, because a friend of mine had just recently watched the new Muppet movie.
Yes.
Which I found delightful. So we were talking about the Muppets and going through and watching some old clips of the Muppets, and what I realized, and this has been true since I was a kid. The thing that I don't like about the Muppets is the Swedish Chef. And everybody seems to think the Swedish Chef is the funniest damn thing in the universe. Also, it turns out he appears to be the only Muppet with human hands.
That's right.
Which was pointed out to me during this viewing, which I found interesting. But I realized what it was. It's not the gags. It's the stupid song that he sings before every single one.
Yeah.
He's given 45 seconds to go, you know, to have his joke, or a minute and a half to go. 30 or 40 seconds of that is the song that is the same every time and I hate. And then I'm disinterested in the joke. If I watch the joke itself, it's really funny. But the character really bothers me. So otherwise, I love the Muppets and all of that. But yeah, I think the Swedish Chef should be turned into, I don't know, part of a blanket or something.
Yeah.
Switch meatballs.
Wow. So with that being said, that destruction of an iconic figure, deconstruction.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's good. It's good.
The human hands are because he handles so many different props.
Yeah, because he has to handle all the props.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that'd be rough.
But it had never dawned on me before that that was actually the case, and it's clear once it's pointed out. But yeah, that was interesting. But I was also annoyed at 5 minutes of the Swedish Chef.
All right. Very good. So we covered a lot here. Swedish Chefs, human hands.
Through Noah.
All kinds of stuff.
Although stunned. We'll have to get back into this.
Yeah, we'll revisit Noah. That. That was I think I peaked with that conversation. I just kind of cruised the rest of this episode. So that is that for the Friday Filibuster. So thank you for tuning in. FridayFilibuster@DVDVerdict.com is our email address. Go check out the sudden death deleted scene if you have not for Parks and Rec.
It's hilarious.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic.
And if you've seen sudden death, you're not going to be surprised. But if you haven't seen sudden death, you won't need to.
That's
but
true.
But you should.
But you should. I think true words have never been spoken on this podcast or anywhere in history. So, Mac, take us away.
Everything is awesome.